racing industry. The Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, about 45 minutes left in our stay here at Bally's Las Vegas, and going to head back and get a couple of weeks in before heading to New Orleans, and there's no telling where you might run into Kate and Bradar, but I think she's on her way. Not sure. I know Hot Springs is involved, because I'm pretty sure that's where you were this weekend. Kate, and good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I'm actually somewhere between Hot Springs and Louisville right now, in the middle of Tennessee.
Wow. All right. So how often do you have to make this trip?
Well, it's not, I can make it as much as I want. Doug's based now at Hot Springs with Florent, so we break it up. Sometimes he comes back to Louisville, and sometimes I go back to Hot Springs. But I'll be covering all the big races from here on. So it's really just once a month that we'll be on the air. But then I go back whenever I'm ready to see him again. So we get our little time apart, and then he comes back, and it's great. It's like an ongoing honeymoon.
Well, exactly, and I, as somebody who's on the road frequently, one of the best things for the relationship is to leave and come back. That's very true. It's very true. Tina misses me tremendously. She's also announces when it's time for me to maybe go on the road.
Exactly.
So you must go down to Nashville, then over to Memphis, and then right across. It's actually not a terrible drive.
It really isn't, and you know, I would fly, but right now with the changes and with a lot of cancellations of flights and things like that, and the fact that you can't direct into, most of the time you would have to go into Little Rock. The time that it takes to fly, you can do it almost the same in the car. It's not a bad trip at all. So it's been real pleasant. So I kind of enjoyed these times in the car, and I've been listening to you. I just listened to Scott. I listened to Mig. It was great. So
how fun. Well, then you know what direction we're going to go in. In fact, I talked to Keith Shamblin. I said, Kate and Bradar, between Alphabet Soup and Dick Duchessois, you had a number of things to mourn over the weekend. So I said, I planted the seed. You had pictures with Alphabet as well. But talk about your relationship with Arlington and with Mr. D.
Well, I've been enjoying. I really enjoyed listening to Scott because it triggered a memory for me with Mr. D. That, you know, the one thing that I will say, a lot of people probably don't. Everybody knows a lot about what he did with the racetrack and with, of course, the type of host he was and the facility that he built. And but there were a lot of occasions where he did some incredibly grand gestures that I'm sure a lot of people didn't know about. And over the years, you know, Shelby Catalano, Wayne Catalano's daughter, posted on social media that when Wayne was so sick, and at the time I don't think they even knew what exactly was wrong. Later, I think it was bird flu, but he was extremely sick. And Mr. D offered to get him into whatever hospital, the very best hospitals, and get him care. He did the same thing for a trainer of mine's mother who had cancer. I had a very good family friend of ours, my sister's best friend, was a customer service rep, what we called the red coats. At Arlington, they had the red coats and the green coats, who were all the customer service reps. And she worked there many, many years. And when Trish was involved in a very serious car accident when she was in college, and Mr. D offered the family medical assistance and had her flown to the very best hospitals to make sure that she would get the best of care. And he did that on many, many occasions. I know that Gary Stevens spoke of that when he was involved in a spill in the Million, that, you know, he always did that. He was always jumping in to assist in those types of situations. And it wasn't just the Hall of Fame jockeys. It was, you know, the mother of a trainer that you might not have even heard of, or, you know, it was Wayne Catalano, or it was a customer service rep that worked at the track and whose family lived right there in Arlington Heights. So, you know, that was something that Mr. D was very well known for amongst those of us who were around at Arlington for years. But I mean, I posted this, and I am truly grateful, because when I got out of college, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I wanted to work at the racetrack, and I had a degree in English, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I could work in publicity. But I really didn't know anything about, or that much about, working in publicity. And when I sent a resume, I was told, I ended up interviewing, and the track was in the process of being rebuilt, but it was Mr. Duchossois and Mr. D's team that he put together. Ken Dunn was the president at the time, and I was told that the people who had connections to racing, like I did, my grandfather was a jockey, my dad was a trainer there, that they did get extra consideration in terms of getting hired. And, you know, I don't know that I would have gotten hired otherwise, but I think that was something that Mr. D really did look out for, and was important to him, that that people who had connections to racing would be hired and would get an opportunity to work. But then you did have to carry the load. You did have to show up, and you had to kind of fall into step with the Arlington way. And he was very much a stickler for details, and for, you know, the detail. The things are like the paper that's on the floor. When you walk by, you pick it up. You know, you dress appropriately. There was a strict dress code. At that time, women couldn't wear pants. That was, I mean, he was a little old-fashioned, and I think that carried over into the 90s. But I think that discipline and that that strict attention to detail really carried over, and I think that that is in part why the facility looked as good as it did, and the experience that customers got when they came, whether it was bettors, whether it was horse owners, whether it was horsemen, you know, that carried through to the experience that they had when they came to the track. You felt like it was a special experience. And I heard Mick talking about how clean the facility was, but that really was something that was ingrained from the very beginning. But it was funny, because even though that was something that was extremely important to him, he would also, what I'll always remember is that in every employee, you know, every staff meeting, and also in every press conference, he had a catchphrase, and it was more than bricks and mortar. And so it was about the people and the team of people that he assembled, that especially that first team that I worked with, were some of the greatest people. I mean, we loved what we did. We worked really, really hard, but we were really proud to be there. And I think it showed in the experience that people had when they came to the races.
And that, you know, I only got to go a handful of times to Arlington. I was working in Melrose Park, and, you know, would go over when I had opportunities. But the sense that I get from, you know, from the people from Chicago and you know, fans and players that and owners that come across just had that, you know, had that element to it. And it, you would think, Caton, it's basically at the heart of why this situation over Arlington has hit, you know, so hard, and why people were, are so, you know, stricken by the fate of the racetrack. And I think I heard Caton's call drop, so we can, Case, if you want to try to get Caton back. But I think it's obvious that, you know, the reason people were so troubled and have been so, you know, devastated by this is for that reason, because everybody, you know, has such a warm and you know, special relationship and feeling to their experience at Arlington over the years. So, Caton, I was just saying that I appreciate that perspective tremendously from you as well. And Chris Block, I'm sure, will have similar, you know, and as a horseman, will have specific, you know, thoughts. But it's why there's been such, you know, there has, leading up to the summer, why there was such an angst-ridden feeling that pretty much predominated, because everybody's experience there was, you know, so closely held, essentially.
It is. I mean, it was more than just a, you know, just a job or just a racetrack. And, you know, when that place was built, I mean, there were maybe Remington, which also was a new track at the time that Arlington was rebuilt, was a little different type of facility than had been built before, but I do think that Arlington kind of changed the mold for what racetracks could be, and what they, you know, it kind of made people think differently, and they broke the stereotype of kind of the dirty floors and the torn tickets on the ground. And I mean, not that there's anything wrong with, I mean, I love the old racetracks, and I loved the old Arlington and grew up with that, but to make a place that was more akin to a high class, you know, it was like walking into a fancy hotel or where you would capture perhaps a new audience of people. It really changed things. And I think that also it became the track that if you were ever bringing a new person to the races, that was where you wanted them to experience racing for the first time. And the fact that in a city like Chicago, a major area in a wonderful suburban area that is a great sports town, that if you couldn't make it there, then where could racing make it? And that if, and I also think that, I mean, the one thing that was interesting to me was that the year that the Million really lost its luster this year, the purse was not a million. The field was not an international caliber grade one group of horses. That it would be, that would be the year that they name it for Mr. D in his honor. Just, I mean, that was kind of a slap in the face, I thought, to everything that he had done. And, you know, I think it's a mistake to put anybody on a pedestal, but Mr. D was, it was a pillar of the turf, so I mean, he certainly was on a pedestal. He had his detractors, and he certainly had his battles with the horsemen over the years at different times. He had a very high standard that not everyone agreed with, but, you know, he did a lot of things right, and I think that, you know, that I did feel that loss and the fact that he would have done as much as he did, and that there wasn't more done to be able to protect what he had built and what he had established, I thought was very sad, both toward him and toward racing in general, and toward all of us that you know, had a stake in the place. But, and it was, it will always be a place that I did. I met my husband there, and I'll be eternally grateful. They had collected so many good people, though, so many top executives. I mean, if you think about the racing secretaries that worked there when he was there, the executives, the teams of people, the customer service, the woman that was in charge of customer service when I was there in the beginning is now a senior executive with the Chicago White Sox. That's where she went after she was at Arlington. So, I mean, these were top executives, great minds that worked there, as well as people who really loved racing. And then, you know, the racing, too, was like, it was great. It was exceptional racing in its day. He really worked to make it international. And that was the other thing that I think was a great thing, service to the industry, was because he was on the forefront of opening the door to the international exposure, you know, even before the Breeders' Cup did it, or at the same time that the Breeders' Cup was doing it. Arlington had already been doing it with a million. And then he kind of took it a step further with a relationship with France and the Arc de Triomphe. And also, there was a, in those first years, we had an Irish festival, and there was a relationship with Ireland. And so there was a lot of back and forth with international racing, too. And so it is very sad, that that loss, for sure.
Well, I really, on this topic, was pretty much just an observer, and I did sense that, you know, his life was also tinged with, you know, with some tragedy when you think about first wife Beverly and son Bruce. I mean, this is a, you know, when they talk greatest generation type and you know, his World War II service, and there's very few patriarchs and of this ilk that remain, Caden.
Well, that's, Stephen, that one thing that should be clear, he did believe in service, and he believed in, you know, kind of everybody stepping up and doing their part, and he didn't have much use for people who didn't fall into step with that. But, you know, you mentioned that about the, he was a decorated war veteran. This was the story. I believe it's true. I don't know for a fact, but there is a lot that's written and recorded. In fact, his story is chronicled in the World War II Museum in New Orleans. If you happen to go to New Orleans and go to the World War II Museum, they picked a soldier to follow kind of his story, and it's Dick Dutchessoff. But the story I was told, and I don't know if this is true, is that when he was wounded, on the battlefield, there were so many casualties, and there were two piles, if you will, or groups, gatherings, and there were the ones were the casualties, the people who were either already dead or were not going to make it. And then there was the other group of people who were wounded, but that would be the first that would be attended to. And he was put in the group that was with the dead or so seriously wounded that there was no hope. And he crawled over to the other pile because he was not going to be left behind, and ended up making it. And he came back again to serve and to lead his troops through a very successful battle. But that was kind of, that was his spirit and his tenacity. And he, you know, he was definitely a leader in that regard. And he definitely was a part of, you know, that greatest generation in terms of understanding a work ethic and a sense of service and duty. And he, you know, it was something that a lot of people laughed about, but they started playing the national anthem much later at Arlington during the day rather than at the start of the day, because he realized that so many people came later to the races. They weren't there, you know, before the races started. and he didn't like the idea that you wouldn't have a full house when you played the national anthem. You absolutely, this was way back before there was ever any controversy about the national anthem, employees absolutely had to stop what they were doing when the national anthem played, when we worked there. And that was something that was very, very important to him. But also his loyalty to his friends was a big thing that I think people should know about him that might not. There was a woman, Ellen Mersch Irwin, back in those days, and sometimes you'll still hear the recordings. Mrs. Irwin was an opera singer, and she and her husband were very good friends, as Mr. Duchess was. And he always brought her to perform the national anthem in Arlington for years and years and years. And even after, I don't think she ever came to the track, they had recorded, kind of done a studio recording of her, and that was her voice that sang the national anthem. And it was a very, she had a beautiful voice, but it was a very operatic voice that sang it. But those were things, the details that were really important to him.
That's like the Philadelphia Flyers with Kate Smith. Whenever they would bring Kate Smith in to sing God Bless America when they needed a big win, because there was a period where the Flyers wouldn't lose when Kate Smith appeared. And then after we lost Kate Smith, if they could have used a hologram at that time, I think they would have hologrammed Kate Smith onto center ice. let me tell you, they could use her right now. The Flyers. Caden, Chris Block is going to join us, but we got to catch up too with some horse talk with you. We haven't had a chance yet this winter, and look forward to real soon. We'll start to get caught up on the 3-year-old trail and more.
I will look forward to it, and I do want to say to everybody, there was a whole outpouring of support. I was thrilled with how many people seemed to love Alphabet Soup as much as I did. And Steve, the reason he was one of my favorite horses is because when he won the Breeders' Cup over Cigar, I had him in a pool that we had followed all year long. He was part of my stable, my fantasy stable, and that won the pool for me. And so he was always one of my favorites, but I went to visit him very often at Old Friends, and he had 31 long, wonderful years. So it was a wonderful run, but it was neat to see how many people shared my love of him.
Well, and I'm glad you fit that in, and so basically it was as I suggested that, you know, people that had you know, started to, you know, get friendly with him that way. I mean, there's tons of people before Gulch died. There were people that never saw Gulch run, but he was there so long that you got to know him. So Alphabet Soup clearly, you know, fit that mold. We'll get to David Hoffman's this week too, and get David to reflect a little bit as well.
Wonderful. Well, Cadence, I will be listening to you the rest of the way.
Well, you got Chris Block. In fact, Chris Block's on the line if you want to say hi to Chris.
Hey, congratulations, Chris. Great race.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Caden Bradar, everybody, and you follow Caden, of course, on Twitter, CBradar, and we'll talk to Caden again soon. Chris Block, just back from Houston, and Chris, I got obviously two topics to talk, the dead heat victory last night in the John Connolly with the hometown hero, as well, of course, as Mr. Duchessois. And let's start with Arlington and Dick Duchessois, and obviously the legacy, trails off a little bit here at the end, but you've been there and had a front row seat, you and your family, for decades.
Oh, yeah, Steve, it's very sad to see Mr. D pass. He was, he is what I call the Arlington Park, and that's his legacy. And, I think over the last few years with all that's gone on with the closing of Arlington, he's probably gotten a bad rap for maybe being you know, involved with Churchill Downs, and his name was associated with Arlington and Churchill, and therefore a lot of people, I think, felt like, you know, he was part of the closing of it. And I know for a fact that when he joined up with Churchill, I don't remember the year it was, but he came out on the apron one morning and told me his plan, and his plan was to join with Churchill, and when he passes on, he wanted Churchill to carry the track into the future. Well, at that time, Churchill was all about horse racing and the Kentucky Derby, and Mr. D just felt like his family carried it on past his life. So he thought that hooking up with Churchill would help solidify Arlington's future, and that obviously didn't turn out the way he'd hoped it did. Churchill became a gaming company, and he was a major stockholder, and I think he was kind of stuck in a spot where, I mean, some people think there's things he could have done, but I don't know that, and I'm pretty sure he passed away with a very sad heart with the fact that Arlington has closed.
For you and you know, for your family, talk about you know, the glory days, as it were, and you know, pre and then post fire, and you know, it's not as if, Chris, there wasn't an acrimonious period where he kept the track closed in you know, fights with when it came to the, you know, the long term interests for the racetrack, but you know, for some of us that really were just getting into the game at the time of the fire, I mean, I remember the fire, but you know, those that have been closest to it, you know, say that, you know, they call it the miracle million. You know, talk about the Arlington that people would prefer to remember.
Well, even pre-fire, Arlington has a mystique about it. In that grandstand then, it had its own aura about it. When the track did catch fire and burn, you know, Mr. D stepped right up and you know, he wanted to continue the million that year. And so they pulled off what, you know, everybody calls the miracle million and removed all the debris that was there left from the fire and constructed stands and other amenities that they needed to run the million, and he actually put on a 2-week meet that was really, really good, and it was world class, and that's what I think that Arlington now, up until of its closing, was referred to as world class in the Midwest, and I mean, he wanted that million weekend to be what we all would be just so happy to have, and we were. It brought in the best of the best from the United States and Europe. And even though the races across the country now have gotten, you know, it's very common to have a $1 million race, the Arlington Million always had its prestige, and that's what he was so proud of. And he was very proud of the fact that he had had a racetrack that everybody would talk about. And he would walk that grandstand every day of the race days and mingle with the fans, and I think a lot of people really appreciated that, to see him out there in his coat and tie and sitting out there with families and having a hot dog and an ice cream cone, and he loved popcorn, so he always had to stop and get popcorn. That's who he was, and that's what made him the man that he was.
Certainly a no-nonsense guy that ran things his way, but as Caton was hinting and gave examples, you know, the people that came up in the industry under, you know, under his eye and the way in which he wanted things, you know, run and executed, you know, provided a great template for, you know, racing office executives as well as the personnel that, you know, that if they did leave Chicago, brought that philosophy and approach elsewhere.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, he, I think he made that impression on everybody that came there. And you know, he had a saying that you always walked around Arlington down in the offices, and there'd be a sign on everybody's desk: "Don't expect what you don't inspect." And I think that was carried through by everybody that walked through there as an executive or an employee. And I always sit in my head all the time whenever I would think about something. I always came back to that, to think that that's quite something to keep in mind when you're going through life. So he made an incredible impression on a lot of people. And you know, Steve, one thing that I'll always remember him for, more than the racing, even though Arlington is home to all of us, and it's going to be sorely missed, and it's, every day is sad when you think it's not going to be there. But Mr. D would step up for anybody if you asked him to. And there was a few cases where I had some friends and that had some medical issues, and Mr. D was a big donor to University of Chicago Hospital. And there was four occasions I asked him for some help, and I'm telling you, he literally stopped what he was doing that day, got on the horn, got a hold of the University of Chicago. I gave him all the information, and he got those people in within 24 to 48 hours. And he didn't miss. He didn't know them, except for a couple of them, but he always got them in, and then he'd always follow up each week for the next 3 weeks to find out how they were doing. And to me, that speaks to the man that he was. He had a really soft heart and wanted to help people whenever they were in need.
Yeah, and Caton had a very similar story as well. You know, that's one of those qualities that, you know, just says, you know, really all you'd want to know.
No question. And he instilled that in his family. I mean, I didn't know his family real well, but I do know his son and both sons, Bruce and Craig, and a couple of his daughters, and you know, they're very much like that as well.
Yeah. Well, Dick Duchossois, and I'm sure we'll hear from others during the next few days, but certainly wanted to reach into Chicagoland. And a lot of times when there's an occasion like this, there's the opportunity to overlap a tribute with a congratulations. And they certainly were in order for another mystery. And Chris, I'm still in the now very empty ballroom at the event center at Bally's for the NHC, and it was a mandatory race, so everybody was really tied on, and they kept showing the replay. It looked like another mystery, you know, had swept by, and we thought we were waiting for a dead heat photo for second and third. What was your impression of what went on?
Well, actually, I thought the same thing. When I was watching it live, I was on the apron level, and I had an angle that was probably not the best of angles. But I still thought he got there. And then when they showed the replay, I thought he had his nose up in front. And so, therefore, I was in the same thought process that I was actually standing with my good friend Neil Pessin. And Neil says, well, let's hope that this is a... We're trying to decipher who was second and third. So when it took forever, a lot of thoughts were running through my mind. Well, are they trying to separate, you know, for the win or second or third, or what's going to happen? But it turned out to be the dead heat, and I think it was one heck of a race. And that horse of mine, he really stood up there in the last 3/16ths of a mile and laid it down, and I was real proud of him, and thought he might run that way, but you never know till you lead him over there and run him, but he sure showed up yesterday.
Well, another mystery, and in fact, you know, I was doing the broadcast of NHC with Dave Goodfriend. And Dave went out of his way as we were analyzing the race to talk about you and your dad and the family and, you know, the dwindling Illinois bred program. And so to have this six-year-old who is still a horse, he's not gelded, Temple City, out of the wonderful and ongoing, you know, productive Iowa too. This is probably a good win in terms of publicity and for those that are hanging on by a thread with mares. I mean, you and I have talked about this. I've had the conversation with Brian Williamson, of course, and Mike Campbell, and you know, with all the things that were going on at Arlington, and when it came to, you know, the funding from gaming, the entity that's been hurt the most has been the Illinois breeding program.
Oh yeah, it's been decimated. So I mean we're on life support with the breeding program here in Illinois. So any bright spot like this horse winning a race like that yesterday is really well, really good for the program. And it's a shame that we've gotten to where we are in Illinois, because there'd be a lot more horses, not just from our organization and our operation, but from others. And I mean, I can remember the days when an Illinois bred would lead the state of Illinois and run in these kind of races and stack up really well. And so, unfortunately, like you said, few and far between anymore. But yesterday certainly put a little bright spot on the state of Illinois and its breeding program.
He's been, I know he was graded stake placed, but this is his first graded stake win, isn't it?
It is. Yes, it is.
Oh, that's tremendous. And you would... It's funny. It's not on his PPs. You would come to Sam Houston with him once before.
Yes, 2 years ago, we came and ran in the Conley, and it wasn't the best of setups. We were kind of rushed. He showed up in an allowance race, a three other van at Fairgrounds, and ran a really big race. And my dad has always said, you know, we got to get this horse around three turns. Got to get him around three turns with the pedigree. And I totally agree with him. And so we took a shot that day, and a couple factors. I think the quick turnaround, and he didn't get the best of trips leaving the gate that day. He was in tight and was a little bit aggressive, and I think Jose Valdivia rode him, and he tried to get him to the outside and get him settled, which he eventually did, but those things worked against him that day, and he ran a very credible race. I mean, there was no question; the performance was solid enough to think that he would be good at three turns in these mile and a half races going forward. So, it gave us the confidence going forward that if we found those kind of races, that it would be something we'd be looking for. And he actually came into this race off of what looks like a poor performance, and I think that's probably what hurt his price yesterday. I mean, unless you bet him, it helped your price. But he ran a poor race down there at the Fairgrounds in his last start. But the turf shows firm, but it was not firm. It was soft, and there were other horses in the race that did not handle it, and he was one of them. And he did not get a hold of it. He came out of the race better than he went into it, because he just didn't put forth his best foot that day, and has trained really well between that race and then yesterday. So I had some confidence that if he got a good trip around there, he would show up yesterday, and he sure did.
24th career start, 7th win. I mean, he does like to win, and now over $400,000 in earnings. This was Iowa 2's last foal, right?
That's correct. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, and certainly the mayor, the big mayor, was a graded stake winner, right? Iowa big time.
He was. She was. Iowa 2 was a graded stakes winner. She won the modesty. She won the modesty at Arlington, and a mile and eighth. I don't believe we ever tried her three turns, but a mile and eighth was right up her alley. So when you put Temple City on top with this guy, and you add in that family underneath of the Iuya family, it sure cries for a lot of ground. And the three turns is something that that I think sure showed up yesterday. And I think going forward, this horse, you know, he's run 24 times, but he's not had a really tough schedule over the course of his career. So in these mile and a half races, are kind of horses, I think. And if we can keep him healthy, you know, there should be quite a bit of spots for us to pick out for him going forward.
Well, and you know, I just realized he's a three-quarter to Iuya big time. You got to go to Kentucky Downs with him, don't you?
Right. Yeah. So Iuya big time. He did win the Kentucky Cup down there, and that was a mile and a half. And so yes, you know, it goes into the family there. But this horse definitely has to find Kentucky Downs this year if it's possible.
Well, Rick Hammerly is listening, so Hammer's already penciled you in for a trip down there. Another mystery. Nice also for Jareth Loveberry to get himself a nice graded stake win.
I tell you, Jareth, you know, Jareth is a good rider. And, you know, he kind of gets labeled as a speed rider because he rides a lot for Larry Ravelli and at Arlington, and Larry's horses show a lot of speed. But really and truly, the real Jareth Loveberry is an all-around rider. And I just love the way he got that horse turned off yesterday and settled, and then let him start advancing, going into the far turn without going too wide. I was a little concerned he's going to get bumped wide, pushed out, but Jareth held him into a good spot and was able to get off the turn without getting kicked out too far. So as a hats off to him, I thought it was a really, really good ride. And Jareth is a good rider.
Well, it took him like 14 years, but he's now won a graded stake with Busy Channel last year, and here's another graded stake win for Loveberry. He wins at a steady clip. Is it one of those real good, mid-American racing journeyman riders? And Chris, you're back in New Orleans. I'll see you Risen Star Week. But what's going on? How's everything back at NOLA?
Oh, it's fine. It's been a little cool there. I'm actually back in Chicago today.
Oh, you went home to Chicago? Okay.
Yeah. So it's real cool up here, but New Orleans has been cool down there. But racing's continuing on there, and I think they're actually having a pretty good meet there. So all good there in New Orleans.
Well, you've had, hey, you really haven't started very many this month. The first, just nine starters over the course of January.
Yeah, we don't have a big stable at New Orleans. We have 12 there right now. The rest we sent to Ocala to rest up and get ready for the Chicago season. It'll be coming up on 1st of April. So we sent the ones down to New Orleans that we thought would be productive there and probably more needed grass than anything. So
sure.
The other horses that'll be coming forward are all in Ocala right now.
Well, I don't know. Then will I see you Risen Star Week? Is She Can't Sing? Is there another turf sprint to throw at?
Actually, I think I'm going to stay away from turf sprints with her going forward. I'm going to look to try to find a dirt race for her going the next time around. That's a tough. Fairgrounds has got a really unique turf course, and that far turn is difficult to navigate through, and it's tough to make up ground. So when you come off of there, I think it's tough for a turf sprinter like her to come from back off of it. And I don't think her best surface is turf. It's what we have there right now. They don't have any stake races on the dirt at the fairgrounds. But I mean, I think the next time around, I'll be looking for something on the dirt. There is another sprint there, and if it were to come off the turf, I'd like to be in there. But I think I'll keep her on dirt going forward.
Well, that'll also keep you away from LZ and change of control.
Yes, that's probably a real good idea.
Chris, I'm delighted for the dead heat win and last night at Sam Houston for you, but I really appreciate your thoughts on Dick Duchessois. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve, and I'm glad you had me on, because I'd like to I wanted to say a few things about Mr. D, because I don't want it to go without being said the things that he did for people and really racing in Illinois. You know, without Arlington Park, we wouldn't be where we're at today. And I actually personally think he kept it around longer than it probably would have. So a real tribute to him.
Chris Block, everybody. Chris, thank you. See you soon. We're going to wrap up here from Vegas. It's been an amazing week, actually. Started last Wednesday, and we'll come to you back home tomorrow. Lots more recapping to do. A lot more horseman visits. Andy Serling tomorrow as well. Thanks to Scott Hazelton started off the tributes to Mr. D and Caton Bradar, and, of course, also with Mig. Replay 6 to 9 tomorrow morning. Archive and podcast soon. Casey's also working to get all of the NHC coverage up in the archives, too. So hang in there for that. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.